It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to the Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. Giants getting ready to take on the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday at MetLife Stadium. Kickoff at 1 o'clock. Pregame can be heard on WFAN at 11:30. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk. Lance, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How about everything with you?
We're doing okay, and the Giants are getting ready for the Seahawks, Lance, and the way I see this game is pretty simple. Over the past 6 or 7 weeks, the Giants have played some of the worst defenses in football. They have not been able to score on any of those defenses. Now the best defense in the league comes to town, and boy, this offense is going to be challenged, and Eli Manning specifically against the best pass defense in the league, and it's not even close, by the way, that they're the best pass defense in the league, is really going to give Eli Manning and this receiving core all they can handle.
Though in typical Giants fashion, John, they may actually solve the number one defense because they've struggled against pretty much the 31st, the 32nd, and the 30th ranked defenses. It's very hard to understand why the Giants haven't been able to take advantage of some defenses that are at the bottom of the barrel of the NFL rankings. But to take it back to a more serious note, you're 100% right. You're talking about a defense that's extremely balanced. They play press coverage. They're very physical at the line. This is going to be one of those games where you have to see how the officials are calling it early to determine what type of strategy you want to employ to counter the likes of the Richard Shermans of the world and some of their big-time safeties.
You mentioned the physicality. In the secondary, the Seahawks lead the NFL in defensive pass interference penalties. The Eagles, by the way, are second, another very physical secondary, as we saw when the Giants played them earlier in the year. They have a lot of defensive holdings, a lot of illegal contacts, and the way it was described to me is they take the 1990s Nick strategy, where every time a guy runs through the lane, you elbow him, you hit him, you push him, and you know what? The refs aren't going to call a foul every single time. They're just not going to do it. So they set the stage early and say, look, we're going to be really physical. The referees get used to that physicality. They don't call it as much. Bing, bang, boom. Best pass defensive football.
And that's why the Giants have to be just as physical. That's one of the ways that you counter and you fight back. Because what Richard Sherman is so good at, John, it's not so much that he's the most athletic corner in the NFL, but he can fluster you, get to you from a mental perspective, and take you out of the game. And he does that very early. So you have to make sure that you stay focused in the game and you don't let that stuff get to you.
And you mentioned their corners. They also perhaps have the best pair of safeties in football. Earl Thomas, one of the best all-around safeties. He can play the run. He can play the pass. Great anticipation. He plays that center field extremely well. Can also come down and support against the run and tackle. Then you have Cam Chancellor, who really is one of the athletic freaks in the league. This guy is 6'3", almost 240. He plays at the line of scrimmage. He's a box safety. But hold on. He can also cover running backs and tight ends man-on-man. These two guys, Lance, are really difference makers in the secondary. And they, even more so than the corners to me, are the playmakers that make things happen.
Well, they'll come up to the box to stop the run, as you mentioned. They'll also drop back in coverage. So when you have safeties that have a tremendous amount of versatility, you know, that's a big reason why the Seahawks have one of the best secondaries in the league, because it's not as if they're telling them to just stop the pass. They also help that front seven. And that front seven's got a lot of big bodies. The linebackers also have played very well-disciplined football. The one guy that I think they couldn't have afforded to lose was K.J. Wright, who to me has had a huge impact on this defense. If you watch that game against the Saints on Monday Night Football, he was a big reason why they were able to pull ahead and win by a huge advantage. So the fact that they're not going to have him shakes things up. But the one thing about the Seattle defense, John, they just find these guys to plug in and the system holds up. For example, Byron Maxwell is taking over for Brandon Browner, and Maxwell's 6'1". He's just as tall as Browner, and he's just as physical as Browner.
They draft very specific types of players to match their system, and they've done a great job of that. If you really want to take a look at the difference between the Seahawks and the Giants, look at these defensive starters in the Seahawks secondary and in the linebacking core and on their line. Look what round they were drafted. Take a look at who the Giants picked in those rounds of the draft, and you'll see the difference right now between a 5-8 team and an 11-2 team. It's really that simple.
8 of the 11 starters on defense, third round or lower. So that just goes to tell you they're getting good value between the third rounds and the seventh rounds. And we've talked about this on this show. That's where you need to get the heart of your value, because you can't expect to go out and spend money on free agents each and every offseason. You're not going to have enough flexibility to do that. So how do you round out your roster? You do it through the draft. And you don't necessarily just do it in rounds one and rounds two. You do it in the late rounds, and the Seahawks are probably the only team that has followed that script to perfection.
Look at Richard Sherman, considered the best corner in football. Middle-round draft pick. This is a perfect example.
I mean, fifth round.
Earl Thomas was a first-round pick.
Outside of that.
But other than that, Bruce Irvin, I believe, was their first-round pick a couple years ago.
2012, correct.
And he's not even one of the best defenders.
Yeah.
That's the funny thing. He's not. Cam Chancellor was a middle-round pick. Brandon Brown was a
undrafted
pick, undrafted guy, exactly. So, look, they have a very good team, and you mentioned their front seven. They have one of these rotation deals there where they bring in a lot of different guys in pass rush situations. Red Bryant, Tony McDaniel, and Brandon Mabain, those guys are all pretty much defensive tackle-like players that specialize in stopping the run. But then when you get to passing situations, Chris Clemens is still in the game, speed rusher off right end. Michael Bennett comes in, the brother of Martellus Bennett, who's a physical pass rusher. Then you have Clinton McDonald, who's a good pass rusher, a tackle that comes in. Cliff Avril, you'll see in those pass rushing situations. So they don't have that one pass rusher that's going to dominate a game, but they have four different guys that can beat you around the edge.
And that's why if you look at their numbers, the sacks are pretty much spread across the board. Avril's been dynamic in terms of getting to the quarterback. He's got 7.5 sacks. That was a great signing from Detroit. They brought over Bennett from Tampa Bay.
Yep.
See, and that's why I look at Seattle as the best way to build a roster, because they take some talent on the free agent market, but the heart and soul of their defense is really built through the draft, and that's the way to go about building up a franchise.
And those weren't gigantic, huge money signings either. They were mid-level free agents that they thought would fit their system. They brought them in, they plugged them in, and they played great football.
They didn't break open the piggy bank for those
two
players. It wasn't as if those were the top two pass rushers on the market, but they felt that those two guys were good fits, and they were productive in their previous stops, and they fit into this system, and that's exactly why the Seattle defense, remember, this is not just a one-year thing. The last few seasons, this has been a defense that's been in the top five rankings. That shows consistency.
And Bruce Irvin, though he's a linebacker, he'll be a pass rusher with his hand down in specialty situations. They have a lot of movement on the defensive line. That creates a lot of their big plays, but it also allows them to have a big weakness, and that's their rush defense. They're in the middle of the league, I believe, 15th against the run. They've allowed 45 runs of 10 yards or more. That's sixth most in the NFL. So they can be had through the running game. That's what makes them great. They make a lot of big plays. But if the offense reads it right, they go to the right spot, you can run the ball on them. I think that's where the Giants are going to have to take advantage. If they're going to have to throw the ball here 30 to 40 times, Eli's going to get killed. He's going to turn the ball over, and it's going to be a disaster. You got to run the football. You can't get behind big Lance, and you got to control the line of scrimmage. The pressure is going to be on the Giants' offensive line to do it. It's going to be on James Brewer, who's had a rough couple of weeks to do it, and the rest of those guys to run the football on the Seattle defense.
Well, if there's any identity to this Giants offense right now, it's pretty much on the ground because they haven't had too much success through the air. So I would think that that could be an advantage that perhaps the Giants could take advantage of if they get Andre Brown going early, they get Peyton Hillis going. They're going to need to take advantage of the middle of the field because, like you said, if Eli Manning's got to throw 45 to 50 times, it's not a matter of that his yards are not going to be up. It's a matter that the turnovers are going to stockpile because Seattle has 28 takeaways, and that's second to the NFL.
And one of the team I think we've experienced this year with this Giants defense is they're a good defense, but they're great against teams that maybe don't have a great quarterback, but against teams with a great quarterback, they have struggled this year. Whether you're talking about the Bears game, Jay Cutler in the first half, the Bears did not punt in that contest. Last week, Phillip Rivers, Tony Romo twice has had two pretty good games against them. Then you even go back to Cam Newton, Alex Smith, Peyton Manning. And another very good quarterback coming in right now, Russell Wilson, to me, he's had the best year of any of those second-year quarterbacks, probably the best of that group so far this season. Smaller guy, big arm, can make all the throws, smart, and scrambles to throw the football. He has 400 rushing yards, but he wants to create time to throw it with his legs.
He's very good when he rolls out of the pocket to throw off the run and work the sidelines. So that is probably one of his strengths. And as you mentioned, when you look at the class that he was brought up with, Andrew Luck, RG3, it goes without saying, is having a down year.
Kaepernick.
Kaepernick, too, is another one. And Andrew Luck has been good, but I don't think he's put up the same type of numbers that he had as a rookie.
Of course, Reggie Wayne's not there as well. Something to do with it, of course. A new offensive coordinator as well, but yes.
However, Russell Wilson didn't have Percy Harvin for this entire season, pretty much, outside of one game, so he's also dealt with some injuries.
Yeah, he's not exactly throwing to the best weapons in the world. Golden Tate, he's a good wide receiver. He's not great or dynamic. Curses, whatever. But Doug Baldwin's a good, nice little slot guy. Zach Miller, whatever. So he's done a lot with a little. But that goes back to what their offense is all about. Running the football. They will run it, run it, run it, and run it some more, especially when they get a lead.
Marshawn Lynch is one of the strongest running backs out there. Well, he'll be able to carry some defenders with him. You give him a hole, and he will take full advantage of that. So that's a guy that clearly they're going to have to contain. And, you know, Ryan Matthews, John, had over 100 yards, but you have to keep in mind he did that on about 29 carries. So the yardage per carry wasn't great compared to what some of the other running backs did against the Giants.
It wasn't, but in the first half, he ran for almost 5 yards per carry. And then in the second half, when the Saints are trying to run out the clock, obviously you're not going to get the same type of yardage. That's when I think the average came down. In that first half, the Chargers did run the ball on that Giant defense pretty well, and that's when they got their big lead.
Plus, Danny Woodhead went to work on them, too, and they got him out in open space. But I would think the most troubling aspect that I've seen on the Giants defense is more so taking a step back against the pass, because if you look at the last two quarterbacks, John, Phillip Rivers and RG3, very high completion percentages, very efficient, and that wasn't necessarily happening earlier in the season.
And it's funny, remember early in the year, all the Giants defensive players said, look, we talked to Perry Fuel, we decided to simplify things and move forward. Well, I think that in a lot of ways might be biting them a little bit now, because when you play those really good quarterbacks, and I'm not going to take RG3 out of the equation, I'll talk more about the Phillip Rivers of the world. You get a really good quarterback in here who watches the tape, who understands opposing defenses, can read them, figure out their weaknesses. They're seeing this quote-unquote simplified defense a little bit, and they're picking it apart a bit. And I think that's part of it. And one issue we've always had with the defense is that they don't make great adjustments to me at halftime of these games. And I think these quarterbacks that are on the upper echelon, after they see this defense on tape and then see them for a couple quarters, I think they're making the necessary adjustments to have success on them through the air, excuse me.
And I think the other thing that we slowly learned about this defense, some of these players are effective against the run, but not great against the pass, or vice versa. You know, John Beeson, I think, has helped transform this defense, John, but the last few weeks we've noticed that when you get him out in coverage, you can take advantage of that.
He's fantastic against the run. Gets downhill, gets sideline to sideline, but you're right. He has been taking advantage a bit in the middle of the field in coverage situations. And look, there's a reason the Panthers were willing to trade him for a seventh-round pick. Remember that. I'm not saying he's not a good player. I think the Giants should bring him back. He's a great leader, good against the run, astute watching film. I think he makes the other players around him better. All great things. But if he does have a weakness, and I'll even go back, much like Antonio Pierce had a weakness when he was here, his coverage skill is maybe not what you want him to be.
And that's why I think you really need to evaluate the player as a whole before you decide how much money you want to invest in them. And that's what this game and the next two games is going to be about. It's really going to be taking a look at the roster and seeing who should be worthy to bring back, who possibly we should let go.
And Russell Wilson, if there's one thing he's vulnerable to, it's to sacks. He's sacked once every 11.3 dropbacks, which is a very high sack rate in this league. He has 7 fumbles on sacks, tied for most in the NFL. Take a guess with who.
Terms of, well, Michael Vick hasn't played much this season.
Correct.
So I don't think it's going to be.
That would have been a great guess, but no, not him.
Vick is usually the guy. My guess would be Tannehill. Ryan Tannehill's fumbled the ball a lot.
It's not Tannehill, but it is an AFC quarterback, and it is a drop back passer. It's not a scrambler. It took me 6 or 7 guesses to get it. It's a tough one. You wouldn't think it's this guy.
Drop back passer. What division would that give it away?
No, AFC North. It is not Ben Roethlisberger. It is Joe Flacco.
Joe Flacco. I wouldn't have thought that.
I thought it was Joe Flacco. I went through a bunch of guys. I said Matthew Stafford. I thought it could have been him. He's had fumble problems before. But no, it's actually Joe Flacco.
You don't actually have the rest of the rankings in front of you. Where the other quarterback? Because I'm curious. Tannehill, I think he's top 5 in terms of fumbles. He's had a very tough time holding on to the football this season.
Just to get a feel for it. In 31 career games, Lance, Russell Wilson has been sacked 72 times.
Wow.
It's a lot for a quarterback, especially on a team that doesn't throw the ball a ton. This isn't a guy dropping back 40 times a game here. He's throwing 20, 25 times. It's a lot of sacks.
They have had a lot of injuries on the offensive line. Remember, Russell Okung missed some time. They've been moving around some players.
Their other starting tackle missed time as well.
So that you have to take into consideration. However, remember, the Chargers had a lot of injuries, and they've protected Phillip Rivers fairly well.
That's true. Then they also get rid of the ball, I think, a lot quicker there. Russell Wilson, these guys that scramble, they like to try to buy time with their legs. Pro Football Focus had a couple tweets out the other day, which I thought was very telling. And we talked about this going into the Redskin game. Robert Griffin III has been sacked an awful lot this year. But the sacks, more often than not, are on him. They're not on the offensive line because he's holding the ball, trying to make a play and not getting rid of it quick enough. And I bet you that's the case with Russell Wilson as well.
But part of that is also being a good decision maker as a quarterback and realizing sometimes it's not worth throwing it down the field and just taking the sack.
All right, let's go to our phones at 201-939-4513. Or you can send in your questions and comments on Twitter to hashtag Giants Chat. Join the conversation there. But let's start off with Maurice in Montclair, New Jersey. Maurice, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys. Listening to Eli Manning on a little press conferences, he says that, you know, he understands they're a good defense, but he says that, you know, there's plays out there that can be made. And so I'm wondering if this defense is so aggressive, maybe if they're going to pay a lot of attention to Knicks and Randall or Cruz, I'm thinking, you know, Brandon Myers can have a huge game. Maybe if we can use their aggressiveness against them in the screen game, but we haven't been so good as that. So.
Maurice, I would not suggest running screens.
No, not at all.
Dude, the way this team runs screen passes, do you want to try them?
Nah, not really. That's what I was saying. Like, you know, I don't know if that's going to be a good idea.
Well, Maurice, here's the thing. Look, Seattle plays a lot of bump and run. They play a lot of man-to-man. So when Eli says there are plays to be made, I think that's what he's talking about. They will put their cornerbacks on islands with these receivers and say, look, we're going to shut you down. And that will give the Giants some opportunities to make some plays, I think. But here's the bottom line. The Seahawks have allowed fewer passes of 20-plus yards than any other team in the entire league. Their pass defense is number one in the NFL. The Giants are not going to win this game throwing the football on the Seahawks. It's just not going to happen.
Right. Well, we need to run that ball effectively on first and second so we can at least be in third and manageable. You know what I'm saying? And I was wondering on the defensive side of the ball, I like looking at this Giant defense over the years, watching Corey Webster and them, we used to get up in guys' face and press them up at the line. Nowadays, it's like these guys are just 5 and 7 yards off of the line of scrimmage, you know, not even pressing these guys, because watching other teams play against the Seahawks, like you were just noting, that he's been sacked a lot. And if we can at least press them and, you know, it's all about rhythm and get him out of his rhythm a little bit, you know, I think we can get after him and at least have, Spencer Paysinger in, because I think he's fast enough if Russell tries to escape and, you know, he can get after him. And I think that against the run, you know, we should have, like, Rivers or, you know, whoever, because they criticize, Jaquan Williams a lot for his running stopping abilities. But, you know, I just think that these next two opponents are quality opponents. Even though we're not in the playoffs, I feel we should treat them like playoff games and, you know, really put an effort out there and try to win these two.
And Maurice, that's exactly how the coaching staff is looking at it as well. Thanks for the call, buddy. Enjoy the game on Sunday.
All right. Always a pleasure.
No problem. 201-939-4513. I want to go back to one thing you said, Lance, in terms of getting into third and manageables. Let's go to Seattle's third down defense. Now, they're a good third down defense team. I believe they're third in the NFL, I think, on third down defense. And I think they're in the top 5 or top 7. Take a look at the exact number. But here's the interesting part. On third and one, they're allowing opposing teams to convert 60% of the time on them, which is extremely high. From 2 to 3 yards, it's also 59%, which is very poor. 47% from 4 to 6 yards, which is also very below average. 34% from 7 to 9 yards, which isn't very good. But here's where they get their ranking. In 3rd and 10 or more, opposing teams are converting only 7% of their 3rd downs against the Seattle Seahawks. Do not get the 3rd and long against these guys.
That's a real telling stat.
Dead.
In terms of defense, the Seahawks are 16th.
Middle of the road.
Opponents 38% third down efficiency.
And you know what? It's funny, and I picked that up earlier in the week, and I'm like, well, how is this team one of the best defenses in football if they're in the middle of the pack in terms of third down conversions? But third and 10 plus, you can't convert on them. But if you get into third and manageable, you have a pretty good shot. And I think that comes back to running the football once again.
Well, because that's their major weakness. Yeah. And teams that get into those manageable third downs, John, as you mentioned, have the ability to run the football. If you get into the third and eights, third and nines, third and tens, you're going to have to throw, and that plays right to the strength of the Seattle D.
That goes back to them being plus 12 as well. They get a lot of turnovers in those situations too. 201-939-4513. We're going to Jamal in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Jamal, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? How y'all doing?
Good to hear from you, Jamal. What's up?
All right, man. Just one thing, man. I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before y'all mentioned Andre Johnson being a free agent. And if that's even an idea that we could even afford him if he is on the market after this season.
Yeah, Andre
over,
Johnson, not a free agent, but there is some scuttle that considering his contract situation, the Texans might consider letting him go after the year if they're going to go into a full rebuild mode, but he is not a free agent. Just FYI.
Oh, well, okay. But if he's man, if there's any way that Jerry Reese and the staff can get him there, I mean, that would be, I mean, we can, I'm think I'm done with the Knicks situation. I think it's time to move on. I mean, I think he wants to be out. I think he personally wants to be out and wants that big money market, which he should, you know, he should be able to go out and venture out and see what he can get. But I think we should move past that. You know, he missed OTAs this past summer. I mean, he missed a lot of stuff that limited him from being able to be successful this year, which I felt like that's only to his own detriment.
Now, Jamal, I hear you, but just keep a couple things in mind about Andre Johnson. He will be 33 when the season starts next year, and he's coming off a season where he already has 95 catches for 1,277 yards. He's going to have 100 receptions and probably 1,500 yards receiving this year. If you think he's coming here cheap, you're wrong. He's going to want to get paid and get paid really well, despite the fact he's going to be 33 years
old.
And
just to give you an idea about his contract, 2014 he's due $6.5 million, 2015 $10.5 million, 2016 $11 million.
That's why they want to get out now.
And then he's a free agent in 2017.
But just to put another you guy right there with Roll and Beast, and if we can even keep them two, I mean, that was just phenomenal. My other thing is this. I think y'all touched on this yesterday as well about the I think Anita Marks said she did an interview with Brandon Myers, and he alluded and mentioned some things about the complexity of our offense and Gilbride's system. You know, being a coach, I'm a football coach, I'm a high school, elementary, middle school basketball coach. You know, sometimes I think we could be stubborn in our philosophies and our mindsets and feel like this is how we want it, this is how we have it dialed up, and this is how it should be ran. And sometimes we outcoach ourselves, not realizing, you know what, maybe I need to slow things down and make things a little bit more simplified so that my players can perform to the ability that they can perform to. Because you're talking about world-class athletes right now. You're not just talking about guys off the street, you know, or that haven't played in 5 or 6 years. You're talking about guys that have trained all their lives for this. So there has to be some point to where we can get these guys in better position, like a Brandon Myers who I guess when he played for the Raiders, he was exceptional on out routes and drag routes or whatever routes he did, but it seems like now he has more to think about and he's not able to perform to that level. My thing is, with that being said, is there a way that Kevin Gilbert or somebody on the coaching staff or Coughlin can talk to him like, hey man, we need to figure something out. If you're going to remain here on our coaching staff, you got to make this to where crews can get open and make it easy so these guys can just go off their athletic system and just make plays. Because when you got guys thinking at the huddle, four or five things, I think it changes the whole way that you play. It takes away the way you play, thinking too much. And I was always taught, as a football player, you don't want to think as much. You just want to be able to react.
But Jamal, I hear you. I hear what you're saying, but keep this in mind. Guys like Nixon Cruz have had some awesome years in this system.
Right.
And the way this works is that you do let your athletic instincts and your reactions take over, because the whole point of the reacting to the defense, if a guy's playing outside technique, you go inside. It's using natural leverage and natural athletic ability to take advantage of the situations. You know, in other systems, let's say in North Turner's system, for example, where you just run the route you're supposed to run, you could have a guy playing your, you know, skinny post. You're running that skinny post no matter what. That almost takes away your ability to use your athleticism to get open. In this system, being given the option to do what you want to do based on how the defense is playing you, as long as you and the quarterback are on the same page, obviously, I think it allows the players to actually use their athleticism more than, say, in some other systems.
Okay. It just seems like every year we have this conversation about the player that are
Which
coming in or player that are there. with that same mentality, like, man, it's complicated. It takes a while for you to get. And I think that's probably what happened with Knicks. You know, Knicks is banged up, but yet he wasn't there this whole time. So, you know, he's learning on the fly still. He's trying to get his groove back. And it's like, you know what, if it's that complicated, like you, somebody mentioned yesterday, you need to get those players who have that ability to be able to play and be able to think like that and process as quick, or we might need to simplify some things to make it so our players can react and respond the way they can and as they should.
Well, Jamal, a few things, and I didn't mean to cut you off. Number one, Hakeem Nicks is struggling this season, not because he doesn't know the system, and he's been here for a few years now, so I don't think he could use that as a legitimate excuse. I think it's more of health and the fact that teams are covering him a little bit differently. And number two, in terms of the tight end, saying that the reason why Brandon Myers hasn't adjusted to this system is because it's too complex, then how is it that Martellus Bennett came in as a free agent and flourished? Or how is it that Jake Ballard and Kevin Boss had good years while Kevin Gilbride was still the offensive coordinator and Mike Pope was still the tight ends coach? So I'm not necessarily buying that it's just the complexity of the system.
Thanks for the call, Jamal. We appreciate it. And look, is the system a little bit tougher to get used to? Sure, but I think you've seen when it's run right, it's one of the best offenses in football. We've seen it consistently year after year. And have they had the success this year that you would have liked? No, but to me, and I know a lot of fans aren't going to like to hear this, it's much more on the quarterback than it is on the offensive coordinator this year. Eli Manning has had plays out there on the field to make, and him and the wide receivers, it's not just Eli, it's the offensive line too, it's all those guys together, they've left a lot of plays out there on the field this year.
All around, you could point to a lot of factors why the offense hasn't lived up to expectations. I think blaming Gilbride is a convenient excuse, and I'm not going to sit here and defend him. There's times where, you know, you watch a Giants game, and you're like, okay, it's a 3rd-and-2. Why are they throwing it down the field? But that's not necessarily Gilbride, John. That, like you said, could be Eli Manning calling an audible and getting out of the run play and looking for the home run. So it is just as much on the quarterback, I agree with you, as it is perhaps on Kevin Gilbride's decision-making.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to you guys on Twitter in just a second, but let's go back to our calls and say what's up to Len in Maryland. Len, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you, Len?
Quick question, important question. Am I going to have to scrape the snow off my seat on Sunday?
I'm not sure.
Looks like another beautiful day in the Meadowlands.
See, now, Len, Lance's pregame show starts at 11:30, so I'm going to have him get to the stadium around 8. He's going to have a brush with him. I'm going to have him walk around the stadium and brush off about 2,000 of the seats before he goes on the air.
Okay, good. Let me get into the seriousness of my call.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let's not discount simplification. I think, you know, Jamal and a bunch of other people smarter than I am, have come up with that, not necessarily as a solution, but as a possibility. And so I don't want to see the Giants just draw a line through simplifying the playbook as a solution to our offensive woes. I think there's a lot to that. I think sometimes you just got to go back to the schoolyard, tell a guy to run down 5 steps and cut toward the Pontiac, and we'll throw you the ball.
Even if you tell him to do that, if Eli's not throwing the ball accurately or not getting the time to make those throws, it's not going to make a difference.
I'm not suggesting that simplification is the only answer to our problems on offense. It's a mess. I mean, the offense is a mess. This could really get ugly on Sunday. And I want to get to asking you about what you think Seattle's game plan is on Sunday, but I want to give you a quick sentence on what I think their game plan is.
Yeah.
And we're going to see it implemented early in the game. Here's what I think it's going to be, guys. We're coming into your house. We're going to punch you in the nose. We're going to steal your food, and we're going to get back on the plane and fly to Seattle with a 30-point win.
Len, you missed one important aspect of it. After they do all that, they're going to laugh at you, point at you, brag about it, be loud about it, and then they're going to get back on the plane.
So what I'm looking for early in this football game is how we react to the punch in the nose. In our house, in front of 75,000 people, if this gets ugly at home, guys, Monday there's a whole different tenor in that building where you work. A whole different tenor than losing 6-7 games by huge points over the last 2 years on the road, but not at home. When it happens in front of your paying customers, Everything changes. Everything changes. All right, so what do you think Seattle's game plan is?
Well, Len, they run the ball about 32 times a game. That's tops in the NFL. So clearly they're going to lean on the running game, and I think they're going to try to win time of possession and wear down this Giants defense. It's not as if Russell Wilson's going to look for the home run every single play, although he has tremendous accuracy, by the way, for throws of 20 or more yards. He's up there in terms of the top five in the NFL. Yeah. But they take that off of the run because it's all set up via play action. So they're going to look to run the ball early.
And then, Len, on defense, I think they're going to put 8 men in the box. They're going to march Cam Chancellor up there, and they're going to say, Eli, beat us.
Yep. Especially since the stats that you ran by us, which was pretty good here. If they can get us into second and long and third and long,
Giants are dead.
7%. I mean, that 7% number is staggering. It really is. So I can see them doing that early, and hopefully the offense comes up with a little confidence. Plays with a little speed. We just look like we're going through. I mean, it just looks like we're not getting off the ball. We're not that first step by the outside receivers. I mean, we're not playing this game. You know, we may not be a fast team. I mean, the bottom line may be we're just not that fast. But it almost seems like, offensively we're playing this almost like it's slow motion. It may be my imagination, guys, but it just doesn't look crisp. It doesn't look confident.
Len, it doesn't look explosive. I think that's the word I like to use. It doesn't look like, any time a receiver catches the ball that there's a threat to go for a touchdown. I think 2 years ago you had that feeling that every time one of these receivers got their hands on the football, they could break something. And that fear from a defense and that confidence as an offense that you can do that, I think, has really disappeared, and I think that's a big part of this team's problems. Yeah. To me, Len, they're going to play one-on-one. They're going to play bump and run. This is the game where your wide receivers have to be better than the other team's cornerbacks. And frankly, have the Giants shown anything this year to make you think that they're going to beat these Seattle corners consistently? Keep in mind, they're missing two out of the top three guys in this game.
So they
should be able to do something.
Yep. Listen, element of surprise, second down becomes the big down for us on Sunday. That's where I think we can do some business, move the ball. Of course, it's easy to say we got to gain yardage on first down, but somehow I get the feeling if there's going to be an element of surprise in our offense, it's going to manifest itself on second down. Okay, listen, I'll be there cheering. Let's go, Giants. Let's, forget the keeping it close. Remember, it's only a 7-point spread by these experts. So I know you get 3 for home team, so it's really about 10. It's really about 10 points. But, I mean, that's not a whole lot. I mean, we're not talking 19 points, 17 points, or anything like that. So, hey, let's go out there and play tough. When they punch us in the nose, let's punch back, defend our house.
Sounds good, Len. If you have time, stop by the pregame radio stage. Lance is dying to say hello.
Hey, just out of curiosity, what gate are you at?
It is at the West VIP gate, which is a little kind of close to the MetLife gate, but it's the West VIP gate, which is obviously built just for Len and Merrill, and you are one of our VIPs.
Yes.
Thank you. I feel better now.
All right, Len.
Hey, take it easy.
Let's go, Giants.
Len was talking about potentially this becoming a really big lopsided loss, and I was looking back at some of the last few seasons, John, since they moved to MetLife Stadium. I think Len brought up a good point. They really haven't had a bad home loss. You'd have to go back to the Carolina Panthers game in 2009, which was the last game at the old stadium.
Atlanta and Baltimore were both on
the
road last year.
I can't remember a bad home loss. I mean, I know there's been a heartbreaker here or there, but I don't remember a huge lopsided game.
Or start to finish where you're getting dominated. No, I don't recall one either, to be honest with you. It's a good point. Remember, Seattle isn't exactly prone to blowing people out on the road either. They are not a good road team. They're much better at home.
No, their two losses are on the road this season.
All their losses in the last 2 years, all 9 of them? I got that stat somewhere here, have been on the road.
But they are 5-2 on the road this season. And the numbers, although they were lopsided in the past, if you compare home versus road, this season they're actually quite comparable.
What's their plus-minus points-wise home-road? I'm sure you don't have that, to be honest with you, do you?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I think it's +7 versus +5, to be honest with you.
It's really
close, I'm telling you. Yeah, here we go.
Is that turnover?
Home and away, turnover differentials, +7 at home, +5 away.
How about points? Let me see. Opponent points.
The numbers are
close. This is a big difference. They're outscoring teams by 18 at home, only by 6 on the road. That, to me, is the biggest difference right there. They're outscoring teams three times more points at home than on the road.
You're looking at the differential. I'm looking at, you know, points per game, opponents' points per game. And, you know, if you take those as individual, 14 versus 17, yeah, 32 versus 23 is somewhat lopsided.
But yeah, I guess
they're not giving up as many points versus home and away. 14 to 17 is not a big difference.
You would have thought the difference between home and away, too, would have been on the defensive side of the ball with that 12th man and – you know, the opposing quarterback maybe can't, you know, audible at the line, and the offensive lineman can't fire as quickly because of the noise. You figured the defense would have been the big difference, but it's their offense that looks a lot different at home than on the road.
And giving up yards on the ground, the defense has struggled. You're right. You would have thought that the struggles would have pointed towards the numbers on defense, that it would have been lopsided. But in terms of offense, that's really where it points to, because at home they're averaging just around 33 points per game, away just 23. So, you know, that's about a 9-10 point differential, and it really falls on the offense regarding that. And I think part of it is because, you know, when they go on the road and the fact that they've missed some of their big playmakers, specifically Percy Harvin, who's a guy that can really stretch the field. They haven't had him all season long because he's still recovering from the hip surgery, so they've had to have guys like Golden Tate step up. Zach Miller's had a decent game here or there. Doug Baldwin's been very good out of the slot, but they really don't have that go-to guy on this team, that guy that really separates himself from the rest of the pack. Similar to the Chargers. The Chargers didn't really have a real go-to guy. You know, Keenan Allen has blossomed lately, but, you know, if you look at the numbers with his receptions and receiving yards compared to the others, you know, it's not as if he's running away with things.
Remind me, I got to talk to you about the fantasy matchup before the show's over and my playoff game this week. I want to get your opinion.
Oh, boy, I can't wait for that. That is going to be some in-depth discussion.
Last nine losses have all come on the road. That's number one. And number two, how about this stat? Since 2011, the Giants are 18-3 when winning the turnover battle. The Seahawks are 21-3 when winning the turnover battle. So, again, you always really get back to that stat as to, you know, what's important. What's
well,
not.
And that gets back to one of the elements of this game from the Giants' perspective, John. They can't turn the ball over. They do not want to give gifts to the Seattle Seahawks.
Seattle plus 12, Giants minus 13. That's also a big difference between 5-8 and 11-2.
One other thing that I wanted to piggyback off of a point that Len touched on, and also Jamal, before we get back to the phone lines, about why this offense is out of sync, and you were referring to the Seattle game. They're going to have a lot of one-on-one type of coverages, so it really falls on the individual. Since Victor Cruz has been double-teamed 99% of this season, and Kevin Gilbride talked about this the other day.
And it's not every play, mind you, but it's a lot.
It's a lot. There's a big disparity. That means that you need other players to win their individual battles.
And we've talked about it all year long. They haven't done it.
So that's another reason why the offense hasn't been where it has been over the last few seasons. Why it's stepped back. Because you haven't had the Reuben Randles, the Hakeem Nixes, the Brandon Myers win their individual battles and prove to defenses, you want to double Victor Cruz? Good luck. If you're a defense, are you second-guessing that strategy? It's not coming back to haunt you in any way.
And then last week, when those guys did win their individual battles, Randall opened on that slant over the middle. Lewis Murphy opened down the sidelines. What happens? The quarterback throws the ball behind them.
And by the way, speaking of Reuben Randall, and he's had some good games, but he's also had some games where he disappears.
Well, he's puttered out towards the end of this year, hasn't he?
Indeed. Ooh. ProFootballFocus.com had a great stat. I don't know if you picked up on it. Eli Manning has thrown 8 interceptions when he's targeted Reuben Randle. That's the most on the team.
And I believe that stat also said the most of all wide receivers with 80 or more targets, something like that. There was another stat in there that was very good that the guy sent to us.
Tied for the most to any receiver with fewer than 100 targets.
Fewer than
100
targets. It's a big number.
Somebody remembers what they read.
See, it's very difficult to continue to target a wide receiver, especially when they're in coverage and not wide open, if you know that maybe they're not going to fight for the ball enough, maybe they're going to drop it, and that turns into interceptions. It's very hard to have confidence to throw to a guy in coverage. And really, that's what the NFL is. Rarely are guys running free. You have to be able to have the confidence to throw to a guy, even when he's covered, to make a play. And quite frankly, it hasn't worked this year with Randall or Nix.
And part of it is because Manning's not hitting guys when they're in stride.
Also true. 201-939-4513. Let's get back to our phones. Thank you for holding on, folks. Let's go to Roldy in Bayshore, Long Island first. Roldy, what's up?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Lance. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Roldy. What's up?
Good. I agree with you guys. It's all about the receivers separating, you know, getting wide open. I'm one of the guys, you know, during games, because I'm frustrated, I'm looking for the guy to go to, and it's Gilbride, you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know, we as fans, we got to realize this is a guy that, you know, with this, the same offense, you know, scheme, we won the two Super Bowls with. And, you know, with Tom Coughlin, he's going, you know, his career is almost over with the Giants. There's no way he's going to change the offensive coordinator. I mean, the only, you know, coordinator he'll probably change would be the defensive coordinator. As far as offense, you know, with Eli Manning, I don't think that's going to, you know, happen as far as change. Only one thing I do, you know, want Gilbride to do is add a little bit of that scheme. You know, a quick screen, you know, something that we could do a, you know, a short pass and then, you know, pick up 5-10 yards from there. You know, but it's all about the guys, you know, executing the offense, you know. Gilbride could set it up, but if the guys are not executing the play, you know, just like you guys said earlier on, it's not going to work. And we're going to look at the guy that, you know, Gilbride as the guy that's, you know, causing the issue. But, you know, I have to realize that it's really the guys that got to execute the play. Because this is a guy that, you know, with the same offense, won two Super Bowls with. And, again, Tom Coughlin is not going to change that coordinator, you know, with just a couple of years. You know, I don't know how many years Coughlin has left. He's not going to do it. My question to you guys is, I know you guys hear this question all throughout the whole season, but with three games left, I want to see this guy on the field, because I know Adrian Robinson is healthy. When is he going to get out on the field with three games left?
That's a fantastic question.
Roldy, you may have a better chance getting on the field than Adrian Robinson at this point.
Oh, my
God. Roldy, and honestly, we're with you. We don't get
He's
it either. To
right
me,
now. I don't
to
understand.
Me, you have to put him out there and see what you got. Unless, That's now right. look, here's the thing. Now, there's a chance that what the coaches see in the meeting room and what the coaches see in practice, they know he's not ready. They know either mentally he doesn't get it, physically can't do it, whatever the case might be, there's probably a reason he's not out there. And if it's my guess, it's the mental part of the game. But if he's still figuring things out and doesn't know the system after 2 years, that's a problem.
Yeah, the physical part, because when he was drafted, the first thing Jerry Reese said, he's like a freak offensive guy, like what JPP is to the defense.
And I still think, it's funny, we joked, Roldy, when he said that Jerry Reese would regret those words down the road. I think that's happening.
Oh, my God. We don't think, basically what we're saying, we don't think this guy's going to be what we thought we were getting, what he was going to be.
Do you think so, based on what you've seen?
Roldy, the clock is ticking, so I don't know how much more time we can give him here.
Oh, man. All right. I mean, listen, this Sunday is going to be a game that, you know, these guys are going to, just like you said, Lance, 2 days ago, they're going to have to, just because they're not in the playoff, they're going to have to earn their paycheck. I want to see, especially on the offensive side, I want to see Brewer, you know, make up for what, you know, a bad performance he had last week. Will Beattie, I want him to make me feel like, you know what, this guy can stay on this team for the last three games. I want the whole offensive line to step up. You know, I was always complaining about the defensive line, you know, which they, you know, it's a hit or miss, you know, but they've been doing a better job, but it's that offensive line. I want to see those guys step up and you know, and play the, you know, crazy, you know, smash mouth football. And if I can see that coming out with a win, I'll be happy, you know, even though we're not in the playoffs. But I just want to see those guys go out there and perform well and play hard.
Thanks, Roldy.
Have a good weekend, guys.
All right, Roldy, you too.
Couple of tweets I want to get to, and we'll get to Steve in D.C. next, and Big Ed in Maryland, we'll get to him as well, our buddies down in the Mid-Atlantic states. But a couple points. Marwan Ali makes a good one. When things aren't in sync, this particular offense and the way it's run with Kevin Gilbride looks particularly bad, because the whole point of the offense is to have the receivers and the quarterback on the same page, and that gives you an advantage over the defense. But this year, with Randall and Nix and Myers even, when you're not in sync with the quarterback, the offense is ugly. It doesn't look good. It's just the nature of the beast. And I get fans getting frustrated, but when it works well, it works extremely well. So there definitely is a give or take in those types of situations.
But remember, you also need to take into consideration the other factors aside from just the system. The system's worked effectively over the last few years because they've never had these type of O-line issues that they've had to deal with this season. So that's another big reason why. And Manning's decision-making, too, has taken a step back.
Our buddy Vic in Connecticut, Vic Fontana, at NFLNYG43. This is all about the Hawks trying out the end zone in the MetLife where they will be in February. This is a repeat of the last 3 years. Last year's last three games when the Giants played the Ravens, and they obviously made an appearance in the Super Bowl later on in the season. And frankly, I think there's a very good chance Seattle could be showing up here in about a month and a half.
It's very good. It's going to be very hard to go into Seattle and win a football game.
And right now, they do have home field advantage. And
correct.
It'll be a shock if they don't clinch home field throughout based on their tiebreaker with the Saints having beat them head-to-head.
The only way that you're going to go into Seattle and knock them off is if you get them to just be very careless with the football, pick up penalties. Because when they went to San Francisco last week, John, and this may be a way for the Giants to stay competitive and be within this game, is they had a lot of penalties. And I'm not just talking about defense. Offense, too, they had a lot of penalties. And that took them out of the red zone more often than not, and they weren't able to pile up the points.
Look at it this way. I don't think the Eagles have a chance in hell to go out there and win. I don't think the Saints can go out there and win either, considering their road struggles and their reliance on the pass to win football games. Now, the Saints can run the ball if they commit to it. So if they go in there and ground and pound, maybe they have a shot. To me, the two teams, and I don't like any of the NFC North teams going in there, the Bears, the Lions, or the Packers, they will get exposed by that Seattle defense. The two teams I think could have a shot in there, one of the 49ers, based on their fact they can run the football, their defense is excellent, and they can match up physically with Seattle, and they're not going to let Seattle take them out of their game with their physical play. The second team that I think can do it is Carolina, and that's for the same reason. They can rush the passer. Their front seven is excellent. Luke Kuechly's not going to get pushed around. He can handle Marshawn Lynch. They don't rely on the pass that much. Cam Newton can run the football a little bit. They don't rely on the pass. And offensively, they can run the football, whether it's, you know, Jonathan Stewart's out now, but you have D'Angelo Williams. You got Mike Tolbert. You have Cam Newton that can run the ball. That's a team I think can go into Seattle, maybe not win, but I think can give them some problems.
Well, both of those teams are built around defense, and that's the big way to counter the Seattle Seahawks offense. The only thing that scares me about Carolina, when they don't get that pass rush going, that secondary can be exposed.
But they don't have great weapons, Seattle, through the air, if Percy Harvin's not there to kill you with speed down the field either.
And that's a valid point, but what we've seen against the Saints, if Carolina doesn't get pressure on the quarterback, guy like Drew Brees, who you're right is a little bit different than Russell Wilson, even in the intermediate routes,
no, I agree,
you'll get killed.
No, that's fair. I don't disagree with that, and I think Cam Newton would have some issues trying to throw the ball against that Seattle defense. I'm not sure if Carolina could move the ball consistently enough, unless, of course, again, they just run it. 201-939-4513. Steve's in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
What's up, bud?
Hey,
now, Steve, hold on. Have you calmed down a little bit? You were angry when you talked to us on Tuesday. Have you relaxed the last couple of days?
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, I'm fighting a little cold here.
No, that's not good.
Yeah, I'm calmed down. Probably going to irritate a few people today because I just got to give it to y'all raw today, man. I'm sorry. I try to stay politically correct sometimes because I don't want to upset people. But let me just say this. First of all, let me put this out there. I think we will be extremely competitive in this game. We might even win this game. Watching the San Diego game last night, it just gave me, I don't know, I just felt a lot better about the loss we took last week. I don't know why. You know, I just saw the way Denver struggled with them against, their defense. I didn't think San Diego had a great defense going into the game, but they made plays. So with that being said, I just think we're going to be a little bit more competitive than what we've shown in the past. And I think that's going to really be in our approach. And first of all, guys, I know you guys come up with a new stat about, Reuben Randle now and about how, how many passes or interceptions Eli's not. Listen, offensive line has not played good. Eli's played terrible. Period. And that's why I say we don't need to make any wholesale change. I don't want Andre Johnson in here. I don't want Megatron right now with our offensive line and Eli playing the way they are.
Steve, don't be dumb. Everybody wants Megatron.
You know my point.
I hear you.
We got other changes we need to make other than wholesale changes, especially with, I can understand looking at other running backs, but right now, I'm happy with the receiving core. We were ranting so hard about how Reuben Randle was going to show out this year coming into the season. Let's face it, Eli in the offensive line have not played well. And Kevin Gilbride has not made the necessary adjustments, you know, in order to compensate for these guys' lack of play. We haven't changed anything. You know, it's plain and simple. I mean, it's really not that complicated, guys. You know, I mean, obviously the offensive line needs to play better, but, you know, you guys brought up, I think it was the cobbler before Rhodey. We do. We need to simplify things because, to me, the biggest problem on our offense is we're playing defense. How are you going to always worry about what the defender do? Run our play. I mean, it's even costing us, you know, delay of game times, all this blue the mic and this and the other. Listen, that's all good and well every now and then. You want to be able to take advantage of the defense every now and then, but, I mean, constantly changing the play. Hey, listen, we need to rein Eli in because obviously he's not making the right decisions when we're throwing the ball on 3rd and 2. It's just not, you know, I mean, listen, I know
And Steve, on that 3rd and 2, Victor Cruz was wide open for a touchdown and they missed the play.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is this, Eli's not playing well. I mean, it's plain and simple. Most of it, is, I think, is because the offensive line, his confidence is shot. But to me, smart coaches make small changes in order to get better results. So this is the last thing I'm going to say, guys. And how similar is our offense today of what was it Buddy Ryan was calling the Kevin Gilbride defenses? Was it in San Diego? Was it to the Chuck and Duck? Are we? Because we look like the Chuck and Duck. I've been saying the Chuck and Duck for 2 years. Buddy Ryan punched Kevin Gilbride in the face over the Chuck and Duck. And that's what I see. We play scared, like we don't like to play offense. We don't methodically move the ball. We expect to hit a home run ball, and that's not cheap. You know, because it doesn't get our own defense any time to rest, and it just looks like, you know, and teams have caught on to that.
Yeah, but so Steve, in fairness, since week 6, and sorry for interrupting you, I don't think this team has tried to force the ball down the field. I think they've tried to be a lot more methodical, but quite frankly, they haven't executed well enough either in the running game or the passing game to be a methodical offense. I mean, I can count on one hand how many passes have traveled in the air more than 20 yards the last 4 or 5 games since the bye. There simply haven't been that many. So I think they've adjusted away from the quote-unquote chuck and duck. And no, they're not running the same run-and-shoot offense Kevin Gilbride ran in Houston. It's very different. They didn't use a tight end in Houston, for example. But I think they have made the adjustments. But when your players aren't playing well, and you're right, it's the offensive line, it's the quarterback, and it's the wide receivers. It's all of them together into one big mess of not playing well. Your offense isn't going to look very good, Steve. And thanks for the call, bud.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
All right, Steve.
You too. Enjoy the game, buddy.
And I think Steve alluded to it, and you just picked up on that. It's more a personnel thing than necessarily Kevin Gilbride and his system. It's very hard for this offense to function given all of the issues that they faced. And it's not just an issue with the O-line. Like we said, when Victor Cruz is getting double-teamed, other guys are not taking full advantage of those situations. But I would agree with John. I think that the offense has evolved. The offense has transformed, not to maybe the degree that you would have liked it to.
Or as quickly as you would have
liked
it to.
Correct. But there has been an effort to involve the running backs in some short yardage passes and get away from Eli Manning throwing down the field all the time and going for that 30 to 40-yard pass. In the Washington game, John, Eli Manning only threw down the field one time for more than 20 yards, just once in that entire game.
And Moran Ali makes that point. He was, they adjusted, but it took him too late. And I think he's right. I think you would have liked to see these adjustments maybe more in week 4 against Kansas City than, say, waiting until the second half of the Bears game in week 6, accelerate it by a couple of weeks. But look, here's the bottom line, folks. They moved the ball and scored against Dallas, if not for the turnovers, okay? Your offense was fine. Against Denver, you were in that game for most of the contest, so you weren't terrible in that game. Carolina is when things really started to unravel with the offensive line. And you have liked to have seen, I think, some adjustments quicker getting into that Kansas City game. But they came eventually, but really they were too late.
Yet if you recall in that Kansas City game, John, Manning hits Victor Cruz for that big bomb for a touchdown. So it's almost as if, oh, it works against Kansas City, we can still get away with doing it. Until you get through a stretch where you know teams are taking away your big plays and it doesn't work anymore, you almost feel as long as we get a flash here or there,
you can do
we
it.
Shouldn't be able to have to eliminate.
And especially coming off of that Kansas City game, you're playing a team like the Eagles, who at that point had maybe the worst defense in the NFL. They've gotten a lot better since then. You thought, again, we can make some big plays against these guys.
You get greedy.
Same with the Bears the next week. And we talked about it. It was lining up where all these defenses were just bottom five, and you're Kevin Gilbride, you're sitting there, you're looking at their personnel, you're looking at their schemes, and you're looking at your chops, you're like, yo, we can get back to what we do. We can look like we did when we won the Super Bowl. We can get it down the field. But when your players aren't playing well enough to execute it, that's when, as a coach, and I think Jamal and Albuquerque pointed this out, that's when you have to get away from what you usually do, make some adjustments, and move on.
But I think the blame is to be shared, or the responsibility, between the offensive coordinator and Eli Manning.
And the other players, like the offensive line, the receivers, for not executing properly.
Correct. Or when you run a route and you're going down the field and you realize that Eli Manning doesn't have enough time coming back to the football. How many times is Manning thrown down the field and the receiver hasn't come back to the football? So it's the aggressiveness on the part of the receiving corps as well.
Final call of the show is our buddy Big Ed in Maryland. What's going on, Big Ed?
What's going on, Big Lance? What's going on, Big John?
Ed does not
well,
have
Big Ed.
The normal enthusiasm I'm used to hearing out of him.
Exciting. You guys have got to hear this. This is going to be exciting.
What do you got?
I'm going to be in section 322, row 19, 616, something like that.
Big Ed in the house.
Coming up. Man, my birthday is coming up this Wednesday.
Nice.
Happy birthday,
I
Ed.
I just want us to play a great game. Thank you, guys. I just want us to play a great game. That's all. Just play a great game. Play this game like you knew we were going to win if we won last week. That's what I want to see today. See Sunday, rather.
Well, maybe
once
you'll bring
happens,
the team good luck, Big Ed.
That, then I know we're okay, and
you're
then we
it.
Just can make a better playoff run next year. Yes.
Okay, so Big Ed, if you're coming up here, we re-invited Len, one of our buddies from Maryland. We could have a Maryland party at the pregame radio stage by the West VIP gate. Lance and I will be there from like 11:30 to 12:30, give or take. Drop by, say hello. Lance will take a picture with you.
You know I am.
You know
it'll
be fun.
You know I am. You know I am. There's no question about it. There's no question about it. Fellas, it's going down. It's going to probably be about the biggest Giants craziness that you've ever seen. So that should make us become the new 12th man. So we need to show Seattle we got a 12th man too. And we need to show them that. Giants fans, let's show them that this Sunday. We don't care how cold it is, how wet it is, how snow it is. We're going out there to win. As long as we can play it, we're going to win it. That's my attitude. I'm going to stick to it. We still got our guns. We still have everything. Only problem is we just got executed. That's it.
Well, the execution has not been there all throughout the course of this season. So if there's any game that you want to execute, it's against Seattle.
It's been so inconsistent all year. Yes, it has. But this is the game that you're supposed to show up. I'm showing up for my first home game ever as a Giants fan. Ever. Show up, fellas. I'm showing up. You're going to show up. We're going to look good.
All right, Big Ed.
Big Ed.
Yeah. See you guys Sunday.
We'll see you on Sunday.
Sounds good.
I'm going to talk to Triggs over there and see if he can set Big Ed up to talk to the team the night before the game. He can pump him up, I think.
Some of these fans would probably give this team quite a pep talk. I tell you that. I'd be signing up to watch that type of conversation.
One of our very good tweeters, Carly Martinez, the C-Notes. One of my favorite Twitter handles, dude, the C-Notes. It's pretty good. He always has some good numbers for us. Number one, the Giants' largest margin of defeat at MetLife Stadium was a 29-10 loss to the Titans back in September of 2010. They committed 5 personal fouls in that game, if you recall. And then the other number he gave, which I thought was very good, Giants pass catchers this year are 29th in the NFL in yards after the catch. Now, I think that goes to two things, though. One, the wide receivers, not as explosive as they have been in years past, but also, Lance, that also has to do with Eli Manning not hitting these guys in stride and allowing them to run after the catch with some momentum.
Which we were talking about earlier and even in past shows. A lot of these receivers are getting the catch, and they can't run after that because they got defenders all over them, or he throws it to them in a very precarious position or precarious situation. So, you know, you eliminate that, now all of a sudden maybe you get some big plays down the field.
All right, I got a couple bones to pick with you before we say goodbye. We do our keys to the game here, okay? Number one, you did not send out the picks this week.
I'm going to do that. I have it written down, and I was going to send it out today. It makes no difference. We weren't going to pick the Thursday game anyway.
Well, Dan and I both said we picked the Chargers last night for our upset special,
yeah, sure.
So we're good.
Try to pull in a fast one on me. And by the way, week 16 and week 17, we are picking every single game.
What?
Because I think that we need to make these standings a little bit more interesting.
Okay. You're running
the
show.
This is the last week where we just do the 5 games and the upset special.
A lot of picks.
Hey. There's going to be an opportunity to separate the men from the boys. Big Ed just said, this is a show-me game. You got to show me with your picks.
All right, number two, I made a big decision last night. I had a choice here, and I want to get your opinion. I'll tell you what I did after I get your opinion on it. I had three spots. I had two spots, rather, a tight end spot and a flex spot, which can be a tight end, wide receiver, or running back. And I had three players that I could have started in those two spots. Which two would you have chosen? Julius Thomas, Antonio Gates, and Harry Douglas.
Who does Atlanta have again? Who
they play this week?
Atlanta plays Washington.
And is a PPR league.
Is this our league?
No. Yes, it is our league.
This is our
league,
correct. Okay.
I'm taking on Mr. Zach Steinhorn in the Greenwich Village Gurus this week. Works for one of those fantasy publications. I like taking guys like this out who think they're all cocky.
I probably would have went with Julius Thomas and Harry Douglas.
That's exactly what I did.
That's what I would have went with.
And Julius Thomas was okay last night, 4 for 49, so I got 9 points out of him, which is not terrible, not great. And I benched Antonio Gates. He only was 2 for 16. So I think I made the right decision. I'm feeling fairly good about it. And he last night had no Sean Moreno. He only put up around 8 or 9 points, which is good for me. And he had Phillip Rivers, who only put up 20, which is, you know, two touchdowns.
Because Ryan Matthews had two touchdowns, but one was through the air.
Right, but that still, considering how bad the Broncos' defense has been, I'll sign up for that only 180 yards and two touchdowns out of Phillip Rivers. It could have been a lot worse.
Now, are you using Cam against the Jets, if I believe? That's who you
have. I had a choice.
Team?
I could
That's
either use
matchup.
Cam against the Jets. Well, not really this year.
Jets' defense has been pretty good.
25th among NFL teams in giving up fantasy points to opposing quarterbacks.
I figured you'd look at the numbers knowing you.
And it was either Cam
if we went by that based on the Giants, you know, things could be
well,
a lot different.
My other choice, speaking of which, is either Cam against the Jets or my other quarterback is Russell Wilson going against the New York Football Giants.
That's a tough one. That's a real tough one.
Cam's been the guy I've rolled with most of the year, and I think I have to go with Cam. I could see them being the Jets by 40 points in that game. I could see that being an absolute. Dude, Geno Smith against that pass rush, good luck.
But if you get a big early, if you're Carolina, do you then just run the ball and then Cam doesn't have as many opportunities where maybe the Seahawks-Giants game's a little bit more competitive and Russell's forced to throw?
Yeah, but you got to hope that Cam will get three of those touchdowns. And if Cam gets three touchdowns, that's probably going to be at least a 25-point game for me.
The fact that that game is in Carolina, I'd feel a lot more confident going
right.
with Cam.
It is supposed to rain, though, from what I understand, down in Carolina, which could be an issue.
Well, they've dealt with the outdoor element, so I don't really wouldn't get too concerned or overly worried about that.
Okay. So that's where I am. And
so far, I think the rationale that you used was fairly
good. I have all sorts of running back problems, though. Adrian Peterson and Maurice Jones-Drew are my two running backs.
And both are banged up.
Both will try to practice today. Guess who's going to be watching
those
practice
injury reports? Oh, I can
imagine.
Somebody's looking at the injury reports.
At around 2 o'clock today. Boy.
Who's the backups?
It's not a great situation. I have Maurice Jones-Drew backups, Todman, or that guy's name is. He's terrible. I have Denard Robinson hanging around. He's going to get cut momentarily. Mark Ingram from the Saints, who hasn't really gotten a lot of carries. I'm picking up Peyton Hillis, since Brandon Jacobs has been placed on IR. My primary backup is Ben Jarvis Green Ellis,
who had two touchdowns in last week's game.
By the way, did you see that terrible call Jeff Triplett?
Terrible call.
Oh, my goodness. I saw that for the first time on video yesterday. That is one of the worst calls I have ever seen in my entire life.
Isn't it clear that he got tripped up?
Jeff Triplett, boy, he is not a good referee.
That was the same official with the Giants-Redskins. And for the audience that may not be able to understand what play we're talking about, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis gets the football right around the goal line, gets tripped up, falls down.
At the 1 yard line. It's not even close.
And then gets back up and rolls into the end zone. So initially the call is he was down by contact. They go back to the instant replay. They take a look, and Jeff Triplett rules that it's a touchdown, when the replay clearly shows that he was tripped up. What does this sum up? Officiating has not done too good of a job this season. I think that's been well documented over the course of this season. And remember, it wasn't too long ago that we were talking about when the replacements were here and how bad that was. Now all of a sudden you got the regulars, and is there that big of a difference? Human element. It's a part of the world of sports. You hope technology can help solve it, but sometimes technology does not solve these issues. It's truly amazing. And you hate when the NFL gets to the point where officials are impacting games. But
now, apparently,
it's happened a lot.
What happened, and Dean Blandino, the czar of officiating for the NFL, came out and said this. The replay official never rewound the tape enough when he watched it under the hood to see the initial trip. So he always started the tape after the hand got on the guy and he started to fall down. So both those guys, I think, should be held responsible for that.
What I think they need to do, and I know this has been thrown around, they need to centralize replays. They need to have an office like the NHL. Listen, the NHL does it very effectively, where you have one center and you coordinate the replays and you have somebody else to bounce off of.
You're going to have to hire a lot more people to be back in the offices to do it. I know Johnny Greer is one of the guys that back there, former NFL official. But
if there's one league that I think can afford to do that.
Not when they're paying your salary.
Well, listen, my demands aside, I think there's still enough room.
Dave from Rochester, did you see his
tweet? I did see his tweet.
He'll be at the game only if the Tino wears just a thong and a parka.
Oh,
how about
Dave.
This? Lance and I
Dave.
Won't be there if that's all
yes.
the Tino wears.
I will not be sitting next to him.
Oh, boy.
That roundtable discussion will not have too many participants, I'll tell you that, if we get to that point.
There'll be Paul talking to himself, which would be his dream come true, by the way.
By the way, if these last three games get rough, I mean, we know the fans can't put up with it. You can imagine what the Tino's going to go through.
You know what? He's actually handled all this pretty well. I got to give him credit.
But early in the season, he was not handling it well.
No.
Let's not give him that much credit.
Well, I'm saying now.
And I was very critical of him early in the season. I will continue to be critical. He lightened up during the winning streak.
Yes.
Then after that Cowboys loss, things have started to go a little downhill. He was slightly chippy and upbeat in the San Diego, but I wasn't next to him during that broadcast.
He was okay.
But he was playful, so I'll give him that. Now I'm really going to be studying him very closely with this Seattle game. He's got some expectations to live up to. But I don't want to see this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde situation play out in the last three games. Because then he'll have to deal with me. And you don't want to have to do that.
All right, lads, final thoughts. Giants and Seahawks on Sunday. Your thoughts.
Let's see how the officials call this one. I think that's going to be a big indication of how this game plays out. Are the officials going to let the Seahawks get away with murder, as we like to call it, where they're really going to be up in the grill of these Giants receivers and be physical? If that's the case, then the Giants are going to have to make adjustments, and they have not done a great job of doing that throughout this season. If the officials let the Seahawks not get away with that type of stuff and start calling it, then the Giants still need to be just as aggressive, and they've got to take advantage of the penalties. What the San Francisco 49ers did so effectively last week, they took advantage of the Seattle penalties, and they also ran the ball effectively. Frank Gore had a very big run late in that game to help set up the game-winning field goal. Giants are going to have to lean on the run, and they're going to have to be aggressive. Those are the two things that will have to play out.
I think running the football is huge. Seattle leads the NFL or is one of the top teams in the league in terms of having long drives. They like to ball control the ball. The Giants got to run the football, and they can't get behind this game. If the Giants get behind a couple scores in this game and they have to pass the ball, they're toast. They're toast. It's all over. It'll be like the Chicago Bulls on Wednesday night against the Knicks.
I knew you were going to try to work that in.
And they just won't be able to make the comeback all the way. I'm sorry.
It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Look, I think both are. I know the Knicks are pretty terrible. The Bulls with all these injuries aren't very good right now either. That was a painful basketball game to watch.
Well, the Bulls at least have somewhat of an excuse to explain why they haven't been performing well. Oh, boy. I mean, you know, when I spell out all-star.
Missing Raymond Felton as well.
You keep backing up this argument more and more, the more players that you throw out there.
Hey, you love Tyson Chandler. He's one of your guys.
He's a good guy. He knows how to hustle. I'll give him that. Outside of that, I don't really find much.
It's funny, though, walking out of that building, I almost wanted the Knicks to lose that game because I thought that would precipitate some big change that's necessary to try to turn the season around.
Clearly, they're not listening to you too much.
No, I wouldn't mind having Kyle Lowry, by the way, just FYI.
I think Lowry's a good player, but...
Good defender. Really good point
guard. If you have to
defender.
Give up a first-round pick, I don't think it's worth it.
The only guy I would give up Felton and Shumpert, would not give up Tim Hardaway Jr., would not give up a first-round pick. That's how I break that one.
That's a lot, though, for a guy like Kyle Lowry, in my opinion.
You know what, though? It's almost a bonus giving up Felton. He's got 3 years on his contract. He's playing terrible basketball. He's banged up. And really, I mean, it's pretty clear that the organization right now is not high on Shumpert. He's coming off a serious knee injury. He's never really put together a season close to what Lowry's come up with, who's still only 26, 27 years old, by the way. So it's not as bad as some of the other trades the Knicks have made in the past, if that's any consolation.
That's the type of consolation that you have to look at it
when you're a Knicks fan.
Yep. Yep. Look, you took the words right out of my mouth. Clearly we're in sync on that one.
I knew where you were going on that one. All right, lads. Appreciate the time as always. And, of course, you can check out Lance and I and Big Blue Hits at 4 o'clock on Giants.com later on today. We delve more into this game and everything New York football. Giants, enjoy the game this weekend, everybody. For Lance Medow, I'm John Schmuck. We'll see you later right here on Giants.com.